All right, so here we are. This is the 17th of May in the year of our Lord, 2016. My name is Mark Stanton Welch, and this is Tools for the Times. We are in Block 4. This is Session 6, New Strategies for Conscious Thriving, Part 2. Last week, we laid a foundation, and we looked at the red, and we looked at the orange of the chakras and the colors and the companion elements of them. And tonight we look at the... I don't think we did the yellow last time. No. I don't know. I may be wrong. If I'm incorrect, would somebody get online and tell me that we did the yellow? If not, we're going to start with the yellow in just one moment. So, I'm hearing somebody running around in the kitchen or something in there, so make sure you star sixed. There it is again. Goodbye. There you go. Okay. About 2 months back, I had a visitation from a mouse. And I haven't killed anything since I was, aside from mosquitoes. But I think there's an asterisk next to them, because they actually inflict harm upon me. It's small harm, but nevertheless. It was a bird I shot when I was just a little boy, and we got our daisy pump, big daisy BB gun, and there I was, just pointing it and shooting. And I must have been 4 years old at the most. And I shot a bird up in the tree, and he fell down at my feet. And I was just shocked and stunned. I didn't, that was not my intention. But there he was, and he could see a little bit of blood coming out of his breast, and he died. And I took that little bird, and I went and I buried him in the yard next to us, because it was an open field. And I never used that BB gun again, well, except for once when I shot my brother, because he was trying to... Okay, but that's another story. I didn't bury him in the field. But I have been pro-life in that form, in terms of the animal kingdom and human life, etc., for as long as I can remember. Now, that doesn't mean I'm pro-life by choice and all that. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about my relationship with the animal kingdom. So here's this mouse invading my space. And, for the most part, we can get along just fine. I don't know where he lives, but he goes somewhere during the day. And then at nighttime, usually around between 3 and 5 a.m., he's up doing his thing. And he's just rummaging, and he's scratching, and he's making all this noise. It's really amplified in the middle of the night. And I tell him, I say, hey, this is unacceptable. You have one day before I go and get some traps. And lo and behold, he decided not to heed my warning. And then I went ahead and went to the hardware store and found some traps. And the lady who's working there, she said, well, you got to use peanut butter now, because peanut butter really attracts them, and it works very quickly. So get that. She said, I would also suggest that you get some cotton swabs and dip them in the peanut butter, because once they get their teeth in the cotton swabs, they can't let go, and that makes sure that the deed gets done. So I decided that I was actually, as I looked at the traps, I said, I'm going to go ahead and trap them. I don't know where to put them. If I put them back in the field, they'll find their way right back into the house, because they like it in here. So I said, I'm going to have to make a sacrifice so that maybe there'll be a hobo marking on the house for all the mice. So it happened, and I recalled, I may have already told this story, but this is another chapter to it. But I do recall that when I heard the trap go off in the middle of the night, it stunned me. And I just felt in my viscera the shock of what I had done. And like a little boy, I was just standing with my hands flapping, and I didn't know what to do with him. And then the horror of it all was that he was still alive, or she was still alive, and I had to actually go off and finish the deed outside. And that was like the last time ever, so I sure hoped that the vibe was out that none would come. Well, 3 months or 3 weeks later, another mouse finds his way or her way into the house and sets up shop and does the same thing. And so this time I'm a natural born killer, and so I just set a trap, pop, he's done, I take him outside. So 3 months or 3 weeks later, this is three thing, here comes another one. And I had nothing in between, but they keep showing up. And this one, I set the traps out last night after telling him, I said, you got a day to go. And then the next thing, I set it, and he was setting up shop right underneath my bed near where my guitars and an amplifier are. So he found a space in there somehow that worked for him. And so I set one right underneath the bed. And in the middle of the night, I heard it go off, but it sounded a little bit different. So I didn't want to go deal with it at that moment, but I finally did, because I kept hearing a little bit of noise, and I thought he might still be alive there. And I looked down there, I turned the light on, I looked down, and the trap is upside down, already sprung, but there is no mouse. Now, I'd set multiple traps out because I didn't know where he was. And so I was confused by that and thought, okay, well, I'll figure it out tomorrow. So I didn't hear him last night. Maybe a couple little things, just a couple little rumblings. So I thought, well, he's still around. And I'm saying he. I don't know if it's a she. But here I am this afternoon thinking, well, I'm going to have to change the peanut butter, because probably whenever he smells peanut butter, he's going to be running because he knows a trap is going to happen. So he's been traumatized. He has PTSD now from the trap that started to, you know, that sprung on him, but he escaped. And so I'm going to go get the Gouda cheese that I had at the that I had on my drive this last weekend up to the mountains and had a little bit. So I thought that would be strong and that would attract him or her. So here I am working on the class here and just typing away at the computer, and I hear a little sound to my right. And I looked down, and I didn't have my glasses on, but I looked down, and where the cabinets come down, there's a kind of a little space between them where they don't hit the ground, but you've got the board, so there's a recessed area there. And I noticed something in the darkness. The lights are on, and it looks like, I thought, is that a mouse? But it was like a big stone with two dark spots in the front of it. So I put my glasses on, and lo and behold, there's the mouse. He's sitting right there, and he's just looking at me. And he would not take his gaze off me, and I'm kind of going, oh, okay, what do I do? What do I do? Because I got to get the mouse out of here. So I go down, and I grab a paper bag to try and shush him into it, and then I don't know what I'm going to do with him. But he kind of gives a kind of a fake little effort to get away from me. And he moves in one direction, and I block his way. And then I thought he had scooted around there, but he was big. Now it wasn't a rat, but it was just a big mouse. And I come back in, and I look down under, get down on the floor, and look along the sight line of this area underneath the cabinet there, and there the mouse is, looking right at me. So I go over and. I grab my Vitamix. I'm not going to mix him into a smoothie, but I grab the Vitamix because it's a cylinder, and I thought I could scoot him into it. And at that point, I'm starting to think, you know, I could just catch him and let him go. And so that essentially is what I did. He tried to get out of the way, but he didn't do so with much fervor. And then once I finally got a hold of him and got him up, he was not very active. It's as if he was basically telling me and surrendering and saying, you know, whatever happens, happens, or I know you're going to put me outside. So I get him and I take him outside to the backyard and go out into the bush, into the forest, and I find a little spot that looks like it's mouse land. And I let him out, and then he moves just a tiny bit, and then he just goes, is perfectly still. And I just thought, God, I wonder if the mouse trap that hit him that was way too small for his head would have just maybe given him a concussion or something like that. So I was all concerned about the mouse. And the next thing you know, he just is just not moving. And I just figure, well, you know, I bless you, mouse. I call for all the angels and who are aligned with this little mouse to make sure that he moves on and she moves on and, if you know, all of those things and you know, turn away and walk into the house. And then about 5 minutes later, I wanted to go out and check and see if he'd moved on. So I go check, and he's still there. So I take out a little cracker, and I took it out there and set it down, and I actually saw him start to move. His little whiskers are starting to move around. So I think he was doing the thing that in this great book about post-traumatic stress disorder, where he actually just played dead. He played dead that whole time. And then when he, you know, decided it was safe enough, he started moving a little bit, but he was only moving his head. And I put the crackers down, and he didn't want any part of the cracker, but it looks like he was going for some grass or something. And then I stepped on some weeds, and they made a sound, and he completely stopped again and froze. And so then he goes back. I mean, then I kind of just watch him, and he starts to move around a little bit, and he stays in that position, and I kind of, okay, you're alive. Looks like you're going to hopefully be okay, as long as some, you know, bird doesn't come along, large bird that are all around over here, or the fox in the forest, or the bobcat that's out there, or any of the other elements. And I separate myself from him, and about an hour later, I take a break from the work and go back out there, and he's gone. And in his place was a bird who was eating the crackers. So it was a very powerful experience for me, and it may just seem like an idle story, but I'm real moved by it. Because, you know, I get the feeling that he presented me with an opportunity. And he came out, and he stood here, and he looked right at me, and he would not take his eyes off me. And he didn't run when I came towards him. He just said, you know, pick me up. Take me out. And I have to admit that for a moment I thought, how am I going to get rid of this? How am I going to, I have to kill him. I have to grab something. What can I use? And that old Piscean energy just took over for a moment. And fortunately, it came and went. And I was just there, it was just me and the mouse. And he finally kind of just surrendered and gave up, and I put him into the container and took him outside. And then I had this real wave of compassion and connection, even kind of fantasizing while I watched him about having a pet mouse for a while. I don't really know what it was about, but it was significant on some level. It was an opportunity to connect with a life form and to have a deep connection. And to be under his gaze while I was sitting here typing, he just watched me. And I think he knew that I wasn't going to kill him. He knew that everything was going to be okay, and he just had to do what he needed to do. Well, that kind of set the tone for everything that I was doing today. And I'm not saying that it's infiltrating the writing, but there was a tenderness and a connection that really had a different potential when it first started to show itself. So the little tiny trap that may have grabbed his nose or something, he didn't look harmed at all when he started finally moving again. So maybe there's nothing to the story, but it says new strategies for conscious thriving. And I believe that part of that thriving, especially as I work through each of these chakras, is really, really the undercurrent of the connectivity of all life. It's hard when one lives in a forested area to not feel that connection, to not want to have relationship with all of the beings that are out there and who sometimes interface with me. And the animals are the easiest of them all, and the insects are a little bit less easy because there's so many and sometimes they're irritating, but I find it's the humans that are the hardest of all. And that's a curious thing. I even wrote about it a little bit later on the green section. So thanks for humoring me, and thanks for listening. Because it just felt important to share, and I honestly wish the mouse well. In fact, I even think I'll probably see him again at some point, you know, maybe down at the beach or something. He's just hanging out there. He says, hey, thanks for setting me free. It's a much better life now. So tonight's episode, tonight's experience is dedicated to that continuity of life that exists between all beings. And I celebrate that as if it's in the times to come, there will be the recognition that we all have that connection and we'll treat one another differently. And not reach for the Piscean energy first, but come from the Aquarian space of embracing and loving and finding solution to what is there. So let's enter into the yellow zone. And the first of the seven topics here, I have to say this, I wrote so much on in this whole lesson that, my gosh, it's like a final exam for me in some ways. But the first element to talk about in the yellow, the solar plexus chakra, is power. And I said, what an uphill climb it has been to lift ourselves out of the long-standing paradigm of limitation and lack and fixing ourselves. The distraction set in place so many lifetimes ago has impacted our willingness to entertain that we are so much more than what we believe about the one in the mirror before us. So much so that we do not even see the real possibility of the one who is looking back at us with that glazed over look of WTF. No one has interrupted me on this to say that I didn't do this one last time. Something tells me that. It's hard for me to separate from it. I'll keep going unless I get other information. All of the energy pouring into us by this cosmic love wave pushes us deeper into the void to squeeze off the misinformation, to eradicate the thoughts of I'm limited and an inheritor of sickness and weakness, to extricate the venomous energetic debris of the failures we have so faithfully claimed and wallowed in, to empty the inner well of lifetimes of doing it the programmed way. We all have to go through the ringer that depletes us of the seduction of the lie and resets the form to the rebirth of the I am that I am expressing as me. And so we feel powerless and resist the push towards vulnerability, surrender, and letting go, still mistrusting, though much less. That these are sure signs of weakness that will keep us ridiculed and less than. It is a journey of stuttering steps that are slowly gathering momentum in the infusion of truth to start to bring an inner smile of recognition of a design misplaced so long ago. Your power is returning. And to support the reclamation, I invite you to any or all of the following. Trust the process. Choose to be vulnerable, which translates to open, receptive, clear in communication, expressive of emotions, and willing to take risks. Believe and act in the knowing that power is infinite, readily available to all who seek or not. And know that power amplifies through applying the new information and living in faith to start to see the power reveal itself from within first. I invite you to remember that authentic power is not controlling, manipulative, abusive, or a commodity. It is accessed via open hearts and hands and mind. I invite you to ask for the return of your inner knowing to reveal your true power to you. I invite you to apply what you are learning in all of your moments. I invite you to know that the forms before you are always more than they seem, trusting that the cosmos and your higher self are conspiring to bring you home to your true self will encourage you to step back from the form long enough to see the light within it. And I invite you to remember that your surrendering the need and the desire to control is a true act of power that allows a flowing with the moments, which makes all things available to the attention. I invite you to remember that all things are temporary to allow you to expand into becoming open to the big picture, which can reveal the deeper purpose for the occurrence. There was never any question of our power in the big picture. We all showed up according to our design. was a dimension that basically distracted us because that's the way it was set up. And for lifetime after lifetime, we've gone along with it, being ever faithful servants to the Piscean frequency and all that that entailed. Until this one. Perhaps even the one before, because good chance many of us were dancing in some of the esoteric communities around the 1900s in those early days when theosophy and anthroposophy began to show themselves. I got a text about the yellow that said they don't remember if I did it or not either. So I'm going to stay with it because it seems familiar to me, but not enough to go on. I mean, not enough to stop doing it. In fact, I think it's important, so let's stay with it here. You did not do yellow last week, however. The copy is not loading. Okay, if your copy is not loading, then you need to right-click in the box itself, and it'll give you a menu. And at the bottom of that menu, it says Reload Frame. And that will give you, because what has happened is Windows is remembering, or Internet Explorer, whatever, or Google is remembering what was there before, which was just a list of titles or topics. So once again, once you've opened up the window, then right-click in the middle of it, and you'll have Reload Frame, and click that, and the print should appear. If it doesn't, then just enjoy listening. Okay, from this place of power, then let's go ahead and access Will, because they live in the same place. Will is a solar plexus-based characteristic that is an expression of personal power and one's capacity to decide and take action. It is influenced mightily by the strength of foundation and connection to the earth, where raw power flows from, and the clarity and frequency health of the sacral, where woundings and fear are stored for eventual release. The ability to move forth is compromised by excessive fear residue and the energetic memory of events unprocessed. Both create hesitancy, which further slows the vibration of the plexus, inviting in experiences to reinforce the lower frequency. It is easy to begin to feel more and more powerless and thus feed the cycle of inaction. I hope that one of the things you're seeing and really grokking and bringing into yourselves is a notion that what you attend to then creates and inspires the next moment to be in alignment with that. That... Sorry, I got distracted by these emails coming in about the pages. Everything seems to be okay. Yeah, I lost where I was. I'm going to go back to the print here. So the system must be cleared from the bottom up primarily through the root and earth star out through the throat as expressed sound preferably. Forgive my pause. I'm still attempting to reclaim what that was that I was talking about. Okay. Speaking up is a way to begin to move the resistance as well. So too is dancing and physical activity that is intentional, drawing past memories of experiences where anger was held in check, when harm was perpetrated upon you in an early age when you could not reciprocate, where hurtful words meant to control you were sent like spears into your center. Similar experiences diminish will to make it sluggish and dependent on assurance, which is unlikely. We are simply unable to make decisions for fear of an imagined outcome. Pay attention to what's being said here because it's, in a sense, a recipe for how will gets compromised and create hesitation in our lives. And what follows is going to be some suggestions of what we can do to shift that frequency. But it's in a sense, a sickness of society that so many have been deballed, you know, castrated from their fullness and their power, and left sort of in a dependent sort of state. And we understand the reasoning for these kinds of actions. It doesn't make them okay. And thank God and thank Spirit and thank Source that all of that is shifting. But our will is our capacity to have free will and free choice in this dimension. So it is essential in the big picture that we have access to a thriving will center that is able not only to go ahead and make the decision and discern between the information and make an intention, but to then take action upon it. And then in further acts of will be able to make adjustments and redirect and call up new information and open to the greater picture, so that the journey, though it may be zigzag, leads you beyond where you intended in a very positive sort of way. The information that's coming through on these things is an attempt to take what for so many of these chakra elements, we danced around certain pieces of them. But here is where we begin to put everything into its place. And I think that's the beauty of the way this form has showed up. Because using the structure and foundation of the known, the chakras, we are able then to go ahead and claim the most important elements of those chakras and how they can impact our moments and what we can do to change the way we respond to them, to put into action the capacity to create the life that is thriving. So specific actions to free the will can include the following: purposeful release of strong energy via physical activity, stomping of feet in dance or as a spontaneous tantrum, toning the voice, especially from the solar plexus, the extended use of the word no with accompanying stomping of foot, and the putting of the hand in front to signal go away, the open hand in front, drawing your space in your own circle of power. To make an extensive list of opposites and go down the list and choose one or the other quickly. Do this over and over. Red, green, black, white, top, bottom. Make this list. Make about 25 of them and go down and very quickly make a choice on them. You're exercising the will center. You're making a decision, and then you're moving on from the decision. You can go back and do that 50 times, and you might choose the same thing every time or do something different with each one or every other one. You never know. But it's these kinds of things that begin to exercise these centers that we've allowed to get energetically flabby. Make a list of three simple things to do and do them, and appreciate yourself after taking the action. One thing would be, I'm going to get up out of my chair, which I just did. I'm going to walk to the sink, which I just did. And I'm going to turn around now and go back to my seat, which I just did. Seems kind of goofy, but really what I'm doing is I'm making an intention and I'm following through on it. That is exercising the will. See, we're invited to be really conscious with life. We've been deluded. And in the delusion to survive, and the delusion that allowed us to be accepted by others and to find a community that sort of takes care of us, we have compromised our relationship with the big picture, our relationship with the whole that's here. And this is what Tools for the Times is getting us to come back to. And whether it's real or not, at least it's a way with adventure in it. At least it's a way that seems to have substance and honor for each of us. Just saying. Set up a gestalt chair dialogue with any who have disempowered you. It feels so damn good to go ahead and say what you got to say to these bozos along the way. How many times were we silenced? But just to say it and to talk like a sailor and to set it up again and again and again as many times as you want, and to notice just the shift that occurs in that process of how lighter, much lighter you feel, and how much brighter your eyes seem to be on the other side of these moments, and how much less you are connected to that old energy, and how easy it is to begin to see that things are different. I don't know how, but they're different. You make different choices. It really happens as a result of these kinds of things. To imagine yourself as a powerful person and make a list of the kinds of things you would do, then start doing them. If I were king of the forest, then what would I do? What would I do? You know what it would take to be the king of your own forest, to go ahead and set up the place where you're in your power, the kind of power that doesn't threaten, but embraces and empowers all, but for the most part allows you to be exactly who you want to be in that moment. What are those actions? What are those capacities that would signal that to you? And then it says start doing them. Take a drive and make decisions at intersections to turn one way or another, and do so and see where you are led over and over and over again. That's exercising the will. That is also developing a sense of trust, and it's also an activity that I just put into the third eye. I said the third eye, and Siri said, I don't know how to respond to that. Of course you don't. All right, let's move on to action. Because you have power, you have a will center that is the container of that power, and then that power needs to be acted upon. A weakness in power impacts the will, which makes it difficult to decide and almost impossible to take any kind of action. There's your formula. Doubt is a powerful dilutant to authentic power. Hesitation impacts the will center by interfering with the energetics needed to take the first step. Too often one gets caught in the what-if scenario, which is mostly self-defeating, painting a decidedly negative potential outcome. The weak center buys into the belief and freezes forward movement. You see, most of these things are self-generated. And that's where we lose touch. We don't realize we're doing it to ourselves. And we don't realize that just by a simple, single step in a different direction, we can undo all that has been done before. Too often the hesitation is fear-based, a specific sacral chakra energy, and this fear blocks the earth energy from flooding through the lower chakras to wash away resistance. The clearer you become, the more easily you can see the issue and discern possible solutions. Knowing the decision can be changed with new information, you become more likely to take the step and simply see what happens. The old paradigm paints the permanence of a decision and its capacity to strongly impact our future for better or worse. Stories like The Lady or the Tiger trigger the collective archetype of the need to make the right choice. But in the spirit of personal power, we choose for the sake of the activity, for the sake of the opportunity to just see what's there. Because in the big picture, there is no harm to come. There is no danger in that. There is adventure. And this is what I keep running up against with sharing an element that's hard to articulate, yet it's so simple. In that, what people fear in terms of when people say, "I don't want to be in a relationship again because I don't want to hurt, I don't want to feel that pain anymore," or whatever it is, whatever their personal restriction is, because they don't want to feel like they did once. This is a catch-22, because the way to not feel that anymore is to feel it, to to undo and to release the reservoir of the unexpressed energy that is being collectively stored to form the basis and the foundation of what is being called pain. And the pain becomes the immobilizer because I don't want to feel it. The very sensation of it is enough to trigger the fear of not wanting to feel it, and so it grows and grows and grows. I hope you get what I just said, because this is the way that we defeat ourselves for now. The new paradigm recognizes that the positive or negative results are two flavors of the same energy. Each has consequences that only deliver more information to assist in adjusting and making another decision to see what happens. On and on it goes until we find ourselves in an acceptable solution to celebrate. We live, we learn. Thank you, Alanis Morissette. Every experience has information for waking up. As we choose and decide, we are exercising will and our capacity to use discernment, a refined reflection of the old degrading tools of criticism, judgment, and blame, and fault-finding. Really, out of all of those activities that some of us have become very good at and were very good at lifetime after lifetime, we have developed a refined capacity to be discerning. Nice. Life flows in a river of constant change. Each makes manifest situations in which to experience the next thing. We are invited to trust the flow and make decisions based on the bigger picture, a perspective that rises out of an empowered center that is clear with the information necessary to choose. Action then feeds the moment to attract the current form of change in a frequency that reflects our true self. It is no accident that backside of the will center, where we make steps and take power and take action, is the place where the intellect is, where the information comes in about the facts that are needed to be able to be discerning and then to take action on that choice. What a masterful design this is. When it starts to be put together, we begin to see it. Speaking of that, let's look at wisdom and intellect. Wisdom has two sources, the information that has transcended lifetimes and is contained in your ongoing cellular memory, and the gifts of the moments of living in the current incarnation. Both require paying attention and engaging your whole self to utilize effectively. Life and its doorways can be very subtle. We are here to reawaken to who we are and always have been. Your wisdom develops as you feel the world and then use your own discernment to integrate the elements that feel right for you. Your true wisdom transcends dimensions and is available to you at your request. This is an interesting perspective on this. It isn't so much about the facts of the cosmos that are as important. It's what we take on, what we believe, what we learn, and how we use it for the betterment of ourselves. There is no way that the betterment of ourselves is going to harm anything. That would be an oxymoron. If I am to better myself, then I become incapable of inflicting harm on anyone, including myself. That might be a stretch, but I'm willing to entertain that. Your intellect is a reflection of your mental body's health. This energetic body contains the elements of your beliefs and thought patterns, as well as the proven bits of wisdom you have relearned. Depending on the nature of these elements, the mind functions as the intellect, which has the capacity to feed information. Are your beliefs and thought patterns life-affirming, or do they reflect the woundings and decisions made in pain, desperation, or by force and coercion? It is these pieces that directly magnetize the forms that show up for you. This is why it is prudent. Thank you, George Bush. Prudent to monitor our thoughts and to see where it is that we have given up on ourselves, or we've succumbed to a lie or misinformation. and to, as quickly as possible, replace it with something that is life-affirming for ourselves as well as any involved. When we start making these kinds of changes, the magnetism of that brings us a new life. By tending your mental garden and weeding out beliefs and thought patterns that do not serve you in your higher frequency, you apply the wisdom you hold and massage the intellect to attend to beauty and love and peace and community. Do a mental inventory. Become familiar with what you hold to as the nature of things. Which of your beliefs, thoughts isolate you or perpetuate self-defeating patterns? The laws of the universe are in play constantly, responding to what you invest through your thoughts and actions and emotions and actions. Watch out. Catch the ones that pull you back and change them. Affirmations and proclamations are powerful tools to redirect the subconscious mind to adopt a higher way of knowing the dimension. It takes you, however, to take the action necessary to implant the new love program. The new way of being is not going to come through Ed McMahon knocking on the door. I'm not even sure he's still on the planet. But you know what I'm saying. It's not going to drop in our laps. And that's the beauty of it. We have to do something to get it. That's the excitement. So in stepping out into this world of adventure that's being activated in the solar plexus, it's useful to have personal boundaries. We had a whole session on this. Let's see what's come out now. You are a collective frequency that is specific to this cosmos, and as such, want to do all you can to keep this energetic identity in the flow of the now moments that are blessed upon you. Choosing a world of fear forces walls to be built, walls that attract the consistent onslaught of the very energies it is intending to keep out. Please make a note of that. In the name of self-preservation, in the name of self-protection, we fabricate these walls. We create foundational structures that are the very vehicles that magnetize what we fear to us. I don't know if it can get any clearer than that. Recognizing that this is a world built for life, where all can be seen from the higher perspective, opens the doors to investing your focus and action into keeping your frequency of wholeness intact and aligned. This is why personal energetic boundaries are necessary, not because you're afraid of the winged monkeys, but because you want more than anything to show up as you in all your moments. So establish your boundaries daily, situation by situation. Sometimes you want people to enter your space, but other times you recognize the energy is pulling on you, so you shore up your field to stay in your fullness and power. This is an ongoing life process. Let it become automatic, responsive to the original design to flow more smoothly through your moments. Boundaries can be set by speaking your whole birth name 7 times. They can be established by drawing your circle of power with your extended right hand. They are augmented by speaking the Tibetan protection mantra, Hung Vajrapa, 7 times while visualizing a sphere of white and pink light around you. Boundaries can be established by stopping your feet and speaking a Hindu mantra, Om Dum Durgaye Namaha. After a while, they are in place by simply intending them into action. Boundaries are not meant to be hanging out on the shelf. When you leave and you grab what you need for the day, do pick up the pack that has the boundaries in it and put them on while you're driving to and fro. Time, space, and the now moment, another element of this beautiful sacral solar plexus center, Let's face it. We've been distracted, diverted, disempowered, deluded, discouraged, and driven like lemmings to the edge of the perpetual cliff of limited thinking and taught to fear the future and accept that we cannot escape the past. This, my friends, is one of the greatest perpetrations of evil to ever befall these precious human beings. We are in constant relationship with the eternal now, plain and simple. Time and space are agreed upon conveniences of the third dimension that allow for a historically slow but rapidly changing progressive evolution of physical form waking up. The linear perspectives bind one to the past and future and sets upon us inaccessible limits that still impact the current mightily. It's important to know that we are in transitions of these perspectives. It's hard to mess with time and space. We've been bound by it for so long. We think it's the all and everything, the one thing that can't be messed with. And yet on a daily basis, people that even aren't waking up are going, God, it just seems like there's not much time anymore to do things. Yeah. Again, the word in the street is 24 hours is now the equivalent of 16 hours. Talk about, you know, a shift in priorities having to happen. The new paradigm surfing, I love it when I just repeat the very thing that's coming next. Boy, I've got this capacity to predict. The new paradigm surfacing are reflecting the diminishment of time, as 24 hours is now the equivalent of 16 hours, thus the sensation that time is speeding up. We are heading towards the understanding and experience of time and space as multidimensional circles, in which we have now moment access to all, in all directions. Can you fathom that? Can you fathom that at this point in time, by design, you can be anywhere? You can set up a situation where you can reach out or you can grab an experience from your past and kind of do the mind meld with it and glean the wisdom that you had or a skill or a capacity or a talent that was there and begin to integrate it into your current incarnation. Yay. Yay. The power lies in the now, this point where eternity is launched through our intentions and visions in action. As we grow in this knowing, we will witness firsthand the mechanizations of the fourth and fifth dimensional structure in play. So pay attention to the moment and all it entails. Breathe into the possibilities and access all your rising skills to seed the forms that you desire to make manifest. Follow principles and make the in-the-now adjustments that steer you in the direction of your highest good and the remembering of your divine I Am. Engage the infinite beauty and flow. Enough said. Let's bring closure to this section with just a little blurb on energy maintenance. Conscious tending of energy in the now is essential to flowing through life in your power. Noticing the shifting energies and hearing them allows you to tend the chakra or meridian or thought to keep it clear and clean, which in turn keeps the system purring. There are two components of energy maintenance, clearing and enhancing. Clearing is a daily process of assuring that the meridians are flowing, the chakras are spinning at frequency, and the settling ponds are empty. The energy bodies are free of energetic debris, thoughts are cleansed, and the breath is deep and slow. There you go. That's your task for every day. Enhancing is an in-the-now monitoring of energy levels in relationship with the form of the moment before you. It involves breath, specific chakra actions, specific chi actions, adjustments, purposeful boundary changes and clearings, nature time, calling on energy skills, boundary clearings, time out to access higher self and spirit guides, choosing to pay attention and respond to the influences, taking time to respond to the big picture, practicing gratitude, accepting grace, celebration and self-appreciation, and choosing to simply enjoy life. Is that too hard? I mean, is that too much to ask for us to do? It's just a shift in focus. It's just where you want to put your energy and see what happens. See, there's no directives coming out of this. There's no saying, you better do this, or no, that's not going on. It says, hey, here's something to give a shot. Go out and spend some time doing this. Make a decision about whether it serves you or not. That's really all it is. We leave behind the yellow and move to the heart chakra, the green zone. Heart-centered living. Traditionally, the heart chakra was the median between the upper chakras and the lower chakras, heaven and earth, the spiritual and the physical. It serves as a regulator of the love vibration, yet it was not thought of as more than just another of the in-body chakras. Anything below had to do with visceral life issues set in place by the moments of living and were under the influence of the oscillating earth energies and one's capacity to stay grounded. Chakras above the heart were about spiritual pursuits and often were isolated from the physical so much that the physical was in some ways a no man's land. Time was better spent in spiritual pursuits. The lower was considered not spiritual and a place of great pain, so in many ways it became more desirable to be spiritual. But honestly, this evolved more from people's collective unwillingness to revisit what they considered painful and dirty places. The throat was often shut off from access to the energetic, unexpressed debris of the lower body chakras and was diverted for prayer work and other verbal spiritual interactions. In some way, the heart was the diversion, as it was a place where one could love everything into happiness. It became more spiritual to forgive and turn the other cheek rather than get into the mud of life. This tendency only delivered a portion of what earthly life really is. And that is the cost of being ultra-spiritual, in my opinion, in my double Virgo opinion. Why on earth would we be on earth if we weren't intended to have a full-bodied experience with it? The spirit cannot experience the earth in the way that the body and the physical can, the way that the emotions can engage it, the way that the mind can experience the inspiration of just the way nature is put together. Since a harmonic convergence in 1987, when the influx of celestial energies began its high-frequency wash to force people back home to their bodies and thus their whole self, the stage has been set for the entrance of the big love energy. Without the grounding of the earth energies and the open conduit of all the chakras, at least to some degree, most would have simply disintegrated under the higher-frequency vibration of pure love. The return to the heart as center has given rise to a direct opening into the oneness, the reunification of all life that is both individual, still, and collective in scope. The clearer one becomes below the heart energetically, the more one can be fully in body to experience the sensuality, the sensuousness, the groundedness, the emotion, the passion of the unfettered life. Responding to life through the heart before the brain or the plexus allows one to enter the practical expansive experience of compassion. Let me read that again. Responding to life through the heart before the brain or the plexus allows one to enter the practical expansive experience of compassion, grace, unconditional love, and unity. In the heart, one can witness the beauty and magnificence of all and not be threatened by scarcity of any kind. Engaging with the whole body, engaging with the whole being is only possible when one views and engages life through the love that transcends the forms. And out of that choice to be in that heart center is the invitation to love everything that happens. What? Again, this is reflected from that book that I had just picked up and was working with. With the heart as center, one becomes capable of experiencing the world and all of its moments from an expanded place that is quite different than what has long been considered the norm. There is no separation to speak of, as all are of the same substance and thus on and in the same field. The experiences are different and the temporary forms may vary in a multitude of ways, but the end result of all the dance is simply a blissful reunion with the all that is. We have established that the events brought before us are a combination of an inner knowing of the I am expressing as me, the loving guidance of a higher self, and the mechanizations and steerings of a source force that brings forth the best that can be to assist us in remembering who we are truly. Dang, I wish I'd known that a long time ago. Thus, all that appears at the altar of our awareness is for our highest good, and as such, can be viewed as a gift and an opportunity from a loving intention that reflects our own pre-incarnation projections. Nothing is by accident. To love everything that happens is to choose to experience the holy and the sublime right along with the skin knees and be as open and receptive to one as to the other. Without resistance, there is no need to have conflict. The truth of the moment's forms will be obvious in no time simply by paying attention and engaging the big picture of it. Everything is rich and juicy and informative and will show us the current version of our inner self. In this space of potential delight, we are free to notice and make adjustments so that we are truly in that love space that opens the universal vistas. I'm just reflecting, and it kind of dropped in the idea that, well, geez, if it's so good all the time, you know, it's going to be no fun. We're used to extremes. We're used to the dance of duality. We're used to having these various shades of gray and these different kinds of experience that will activate different parts of ourselves. And we believe that that's what this dimension and life are about. And that's true to some degree. And in the nature of expanding into this loving all that is vibration, we have a tendency to kind of go, where's the fun in that? What's beginning to come in a sense, is the idea that the gift of it is worth way more than the cost. The gift of it is beginning to show that we begin to experience the truth of this dimension. All that's been held back and compromised so that we can get by. I remember way back in, probably in freshman year in college, took a psychology course because I was kind of wondering if I wanted to go that way. But it had some statement about the downgrading of our senses, about how the sense capacity is so much more than we allow, than the brain allows, that it steps down the actual vibratory forms of things so that we don't get overwhelmed. And it's curious that that would just continue to be going on over and over and over again. When I look at the work of Van Gogh, I begin to see the vibration that was existing in all life. And true to Piscean form, Van Gogh and others who saw the vibration, as personally unnerving as that might be, were then branded as crazy and institutionalized because they saw things differently. Thank God we're out of that sort of energy. He says, tongue in cheek, knowing full well that that is still alive and well in some places around this world and in this country and even in communities. The judgment of being out of the norm. Imagine for a moment, moments and days and months and years with no overwhelm, no resistance, no separation, only the openness and anticipation of the beautiful gift that accompanies this one before me. How can I best serve the highest frequencies with my thoughts, words, and actions, no matter what flows from the other who is the recipient? We evolve to see love, think love, be love, claim love, give love. How does it get better than this? So what they're alluding to here and what came through from this book was really about the nature of a relationship where you stand in that presence. And there's a lot to be done with it. It's very interesting. And it's also about seeing in the relationship, on a deeper level, the reflection of ourselves and And in that sense, we use that opportunity to feed exactly what it is we desire for ourselves. I don't know if you're following me on that. I'm not sure I'm following myself on that. But too often in relationships, and I kind of get this into this in the throat chakra, in communication, when we start sharing our personal moments and truth and get into a conversation, especially if it begins to get into a little bit of heat, then there's not really any communicating going on. There's just an exchange of personal preferences and desires to have a certain thing, which really comes down to a desire to be heard and a desire to be witnessed, which is the undercurrent of all relationships. This is why the importance of feeding ourselves first and witnessing ourselves into a place of balance and wholeness allows us then to stand in the presence of someone who, even in those moments, is willing to not see us for the truth of our being, but to find fault with our essence. And we can stay there in the presence of that because we are well-fed and well-balanced, and we can love the experience for the opportunity for both of us to see who we are in that moment. Yeah, it sounds kind of like science fiction, but I would invite you to get used to the idea, because this, I believe, is what's coming. When the heart is open and the chakras are clear, we are impacted by life in ways that open us to feel waves of loving support for the others who stand before us, who are impacted by life, who are the recipients of the pain and the atrocities that often fall at the hands of man against man. We feel compassion from the depths of the heart to desire only to witness the other back to remembering who they are, no matter their transgression. We do not experience the compacting of judgment or criticism. We do not hold back, but choose to infuse love in our vision and allow our hearts to see beauty in all that our gaze falls upon. We feel compelled to help others and support with touch or a look or a word. We wash everything in the light waves of the big love as it pours straight from the oneness out through your own heart to lift up the spirit and cellular structure of all that are in its field. And we expect nothing. This is compassion. And from the book, Love, Everything That Happens, there are a couple affirmative paragraphs that I wanted to include here. And I'm going to read it out loud and invite you to do the same, unless you want to read through it first so you don't claim something you don't want. But I wouldn't put something in here that I didn't think has value. So let's give it a shot. I no longer fight with those who insist on fighting with me. I acknowledge anyone who fights is only fighting for the grace of their own loving attention. I freely give loving attention to whatever calls out for it, whether appearing as jumbled emotions in my body, a noisy mind of endless thoughts, or the relentless behavior of those I encounter. By speaking to others in a tone and manner that suggest how much better they deserve to treat themselves when not in my presence, I help raise the vibration of the planet. I know full well that my path cannot be defined by how others treat me, but only how I choose to respond. Even though it seems like I am speaking to other characters in my play, as the truth of all that is, whatever I say to another is a love letter sent to every heart. Knowing this, I relinquish any desire or tendency to fight, negotiate, or defend, and I return to love by embracing the truth of all. Whether or not those I love consciously receive my gifts, it is I who walks away from each encounter more open, more conscious, and more empowered than any moment before. So let that one resonate for a moment, and we'll go down to the other one. Whenever righteousness arises, it is here to be loved as only I can love it. When victimhood is apparent, it is here to be loved as only I can love it. When entitlement arises, it is here to be loved as only I can love it. When neediness remains, it is here to be loved as only I can love it. When the finger of blame points in any direction or is turned upon myself, it is here to be loved as only I can love it. When I am inundated by the stress, pressure, expectations, and obligations of any role or responsibility that I am playing out in my family, occupation, or in any relationship, it is only here to be loved as only I can love it. Even when I'm feeling guilty, ashamed, hopeless, withdrawn, uninspired, apathetic, judgmental, cruel, heartless, insecure, spiteful, dishonest, callous, pessimistic, passive-aggressive, or even sarcastic, even all of that is here to be loved as only I can do it. Interesting stuff. And let's give great gratitude and thanks for those kinds of words to come through people. Historically, so many humans thought of themselves in one way or another as victims of life, at the mercy of the unexpected and the accidentals that play favorites for some unexplained reason. Life happened and you made the best of it. There was little to be really thankful for, and since many gods were vengeful with the lowest frequencies of human characteristics, it seemed hopeless. How soon can this life end? Was a common thought. In the midst of this program of despair, there always sat the truth that life is a journey that is fed and built upon by thoughts, feelings, and actions in this earth plane of duality and a far-reaching pendulum swing. Those who chose to see beauty and acknowledge it began to see a universe that reciprocated. It seemed the more that was appreciated, then the more there was delivered to appreciate. And so in these sweeping Aquarian wake-up times, the power of gratitude is spreading. Even in the throes of a difficult situation, there is always something to turn the attention to in appreciation. Gratitude is the mover of manifestation. It appears. Turning one's honest focus to finding the gift in the moment always points to another path that leads to solution. It is a universal law. Some will bitch and moan and complain about all the crap in their life and fail to see the steady flow that simply gives them more and more of what they keep claiming with their words, their emotions, and their actions. They will find fault and blame and rarely thank anyone for anything. They, too, are on a pathway that will eventually lead home. Most are a combination of the two, being grateful in feeling and expressing overwhelm. This is fine temporarily. However, the time is now to begin to give more attention and energy to the gratitude for life that it deserves. Choose to test the principle and see how beautiful it feels. How beautifully it feeds you, the frequency of your expression, in spades. To claim principle, one must first make a leap of faith out of the old paradigms. Do it now and be grateful in the process. You will be rewarded, grasshopper. And in this heart chakra, green zone, we look at breath. To breathe is to live. To breathe consciously is to thrive. The air contains the life-sustaining oxygen and the chi force that gives life. Learning to and then crossing and choosing to breathe with full awareness will change everything and give you back your keys to your own inner kingdom. So let's just review something that you knew when you were first born. As an infant, you would breathe in a circle according to your design. In so doing, with uninterrupted flow, you would process toxic energy out and continually introduce the chi-rich oxygen that would flood the whole self and sustain the body for all that was blessed upon you. Had this design process continued, there would be no chaos, no toxic reservoirs of unexpressed pain that turns human against human. But it did not. It was silenced and terminated temporarily for a long, long time by the first shh, shh, that fell upon our being by the parental units. The startled organism interrupted the circle of breath and the storage began. To reclaim the design template, one must breathe consciously in order to restart the original design. breath to the belly, to the bottom of the lung, and allow, breathe to the belly and the bottom of the lung, and allow the life-giving substance to infiltrate the tissues and cells. Return to the flow and ensure that no more of the unexpressed is introduced into the precious energy bodies. And then choose to go forward and release all that has been held until you are clear and in the design flow once again. The heart and lungs form the circulatory system. They deliver the blood and the nutrients as well as provide the vehicle for energetic release of the energetic and cellular debris. Allowing the free flow of tears will augment the circulatory system by assisting in significantly reducing energetic blockages, thus allowing the substance of the breath to nourish the whole body even more. And below that, I give some familiar and one or two other additional cleansing breath processes that you may want to entertain using. And I said, use all of these breathing tools regularly. The more you use them, the clearer you will become. Develop the habit of breathing fully and deeply and slowly, and soon you will reside in the sublime realms regularly, completely capable of being full in body while having celestial access back in your original design. And finally, into relationship. Not finally, it looks like there are two. Now, relationship in relation to the heart chakra. To be in relationship is one of the points of incarnation into the earth plane. However, it is so much more than we realize. There are five major focal points, domains of relationship. One, with self. Two, with the kingdoms of the earth. Three, with the celestial beings. Four, with your higher self to source. And five, with humans. Curious sequence, huh? Yet this is based on the importance to allow you to be filled up and in center before you engage the most challenging relationships, the human ones. Your primary relationship is with self. Choosing to practice complete self-care is essential to give you your foundation and have all that is needed to interact outward. Learning to engage the kingdoms of the earth will support your foundation of energy and power and also provide the child self with the enjoyment of play and wonder and imagination. Not being alone because of the earth connection will allow you to be present at times when you might otherwise be hesitant. Establishing relationship with the celestial beings will expand your depth of connection to access the angelic realms and have direct access to your host of guides and teachers and helpers. Doing this will allow you to be fully present in the big picture. Developing a mutual relationship with higher self and source may seem like the most important. Doing the others first allows you to be more fully in body and thus engaged in the earth playground. Too often, spiritual and higher pursuits and connections pull people right out of their physical body, mostly because of the reservoirs of pain and toxic, unexpressed debris that they want no part of. We are here to be whole beings. Accessing higher self will support your willingness to follow that guidance and take action because you are filled up with love and power. Some of these steerings by the higher self can become intense and confrontive as well. Being in body will likely give you a greater willingness to trust and take action that is needed. The relationships with humans are one of the primary working fields in this dimension. Here we get to see consistent reflections of ourself and our unprocessed wounds. Our beliefs and personal issues are mirrored to us by those we attract into our moments of living. Finding a way to be present is necessary to reawaken fully to be a witness to others. Your family of origin will provide a unique array of challenges to embrace. Your friendships and community will afford you opportunities to be childlike and also committed to a collective purpose. Finally, your primary relationships will serve to reveal the depth of you to you. Here you will be invited to be humble and transparent and learn to own your own issues in order to wake up more. Choosing to stay present rather than run for the next expression in new clothes will give you a greater opportunity to clear the deep debris that has resided in you for quite some time. Getting clear to witness with an open heart both the partner and the self is one of the primary purposes for this kind of relationship. Choosing to end something is natural and done consciously to honor the changes or recognize the completion of the original purpose for connecting. Tend all of your relationships with an open and loving heart in order to live fully in the wide expanse of this dimension. There's some very useful stuff in that little expression about human relationships there to hold on to. In no way am I perpetuating the idea that we find somebody and stay with them and then lean on that and all of that, although that is a choice. But we recognize that we come together for a specific purpose. And sometimes when that purpose has been fulfilled, we consciously decide to do something else. And with all the love we can muster, we say goodbye to that. The old way is to cling to it. My grandparents were married for 75 years. They couldn't stand one another as it got towards the end. But they were so immersed in one another that when my grandmother died, my grandfather, who was perfectly healthy, gave up and thought he couldn't live without her. I can still hear Barry Manilow singing in the background. I can't live if living is without you. And he sang it with a Greek accent. Not true. But you get the picture. The childlike energy that comes through the heart, this pure energy of the wild and free child, enters in through the backside of the heart chakra. This ensures that the child is infused with the higher love frequency vibration first. What she does with it once it arrives is a direct result of the held energies and wounds and belief systems established up until now. The clearer we get energetically, the greater the likelihood that the child gains access to his pure expression capabilities. Let this be the main reason to do the work that is necessary, the motivator to stay the course and wake up fully, to run with abandon and frolic free of the controls of fear and punishment is a beautiful thought and an attainable reality as well. The source energy does not end. It is up to us to clear the pathway and allow the energy to infiltrate the cells to trigger the deeper remembering and give you back your childhood that then lives in companionship with the adult. Clear and playful and wrapped in wonder. Okay, let's let that go. It is becoming increasingly apparent that we are not going to be able to complete the whole thing tonight. And that is in alignment with what I was starting to think, because as I have worked with this and have evolved towards the upper chakras, it's all leading to the notion of oneness and the interconnectedness of all things. So I think this is working out perfectly. That next week we're going to pick up where we left off here, which will probably be halfway through the blue and then into the indigo and into the crown. And the idea of oneness will be the celebration that happens on the other side of doing the crown energy. And I believe that next week will very likely wrap the whole process up, because there's not much more to say on oneness except that it's happening. I'm sure I'll find something to say. But that's the way it's beginning to look, that tonight we'll go as far as we can. We're going to let you sit in the frequencies of these, because there's so much that's being given to your chakras to integrate and to put into action. Pretty exciting. Let's go to the blue. The voice. The design is impeccable. A working masterpiece of form and function. The larynx and the voice box are incredible, providing the sound source for the health and well-being and manifestation capacity of the being. This voice can be used to clear energetic debris within the body itself. It can be used to express the unexpressible wounds simply by sounding. It can communicate thoughts, ideas, beliefs, and feelings. It can send marching orders to the cosmos to make manifest the intention. It can entertain and accompany and inspire and inform. But to do all of this, it must be used. To many, too many, T-O-O, have been silenced by external command or threat, and their voice is an echo of itself, used only for the bare essentials. This is truly one of the greatest injustices. If you have been silenced by any means except a physical compromise, then you must take a stand in this moment and reactivate the sound that is born in you. Make your sound. Shout to the heavens. Release all the unspoken words in a glorious cacophony of form busting sound waves. Shout, shout, let it all out. These are the things I can do without. Come on. Sorry, I just went down an 80s path there. Yes. Make your sounds. Speak your words. Recite your poems. Tell your stories. Sing your songs. Do it all and reconnect with the inborn substance that launches you into the world. Never be afraid to speak your truth outwardly, even if it is only to the wind. The unspoken cannot ever be silenced and stored in tissue again. Speak out before you sleep all that was said through the course of your day. Sigh a lot, hum a lot, play with the mouth and make sounds like you did when you were exploring the mechanism as an infant. Make your voice orchestrate the moments of your day. Talk to the trees and the animals and send loving words to all who cross your path. Hold nothing back. Doing so will activate a deep, deep element of your true power. Become familiar with your voice. Speak from the throat and notice how strident and clear it can be, projecting to the back of the theater. Let your sound move into the cranium and notice how the nasal qualities tickle the crown and vibrate the pineal and pituitary glands. Move the voice down the back of the throat and let it drop into the body to give it the warmth and the substance of life. Of you, life lived. Of your life lived. Combine all three resonance chambers to give your voice the quality that speaks you. Play with this until you find your true voice. Make funny voices and engage them in conversations. Create characters who are identified by their voice. Apply accents. Oh, and have lots of fun. Play with vowels and consonants, extending the vowels to bring out the emotional substance of you. Let the consonants act like gates to your expression. Emphasize. Re-explore how they are made in your mouth. Play with the mouth and the tongue and the placement to discover the harmonics that can be produced by you. Let the consonants act like gates to your expression, as I just said. Discern how the harmonics can impact your whole being and bring you into higher vibrational realms with your feet firmly planted on this glorious earth. Mimic life with your voice. Make the wind and the waves and the rushing of leaves. Become a bird and communicate with those who fly into your space. Ask for help. Give compliments. Inform. Invite. Tell the current feelings. Ask questions. Engage in conversations as different characters. Invite others to play with you. Laugh long and hard and do a bunch of different variations and notice how each impacts you. Send your voice to an area in your body that is calling through pain or discomfort. Ask the pain what it has to say and then let it speak. Reach back to the wounds and dig up the words cowering in the shadows of be quiet. Take them by the hand and lead them to the edge of the canyon and let them say what must be said over and over until it is all said. And then compliment one another out loud because you just like to hear the sound of this magnificent voice. You get the picture. And do enjoy it. Another element of the voice and the throat chakra is sounding. We easily get caught up in drawing cultural lines in the sand, choosing to fit in at any cost, leaving parts of our full selves strewn along the highway to now. When were you told to be quiet? When did your soundtrack to life get locked in the room of conformity? When did you agree to be just a pretty face? To hell with all of those prisons. You are here to be heard, and life is listening. Always. It needs your sound. Your voice must be heard to merge with all the others, to initiate that grand human symphony that is just so damn long overdue. It's not the words unspoken so much as it is the sound. The utterings and the oscillating calls are the fundamental, the foundational juice of all language, no matter how controlled it is. When you were new to this life, over and over, you would experience something for the first time. You would drink it in with all your senses. Your voice would wash over and through it, seeking a conversation of sound waves that only you could decipher. And then it was given a name. There went the power. There went the experience. There went the juicy love affair. On to the next discovery, only to be eventually put in your place. And now, after all these years, what is left to discover? Well, how about you? That sound that is from the very vibration of life, from the heartbeat of the center of the cosmos herself, must come through you again. Make the sound. Take a breath and then let the sound just fall out, delivered by magic. Turn on the faucet and let them fly out of your holiness. Sound yourself into the fullness of the moment and make the sound and then that one. Sustain them and contain them with staccato utterances. Vary the pitch and see what they do. Notice where the pitches activate your body. Create a sound relationship with your physical and find the pitches that will nuzzle up to that body part and soothe it into remembering health. Become a sound machine. Bless the world with your voice. Acknowledge everything out there with a sound. Hey, hey, oh, yeah, hey, mm. Give it the temporary identity of heartfelt witness, and then pause to hear the response. Listen closely and then respond back. Create the conversation that only the both of you understand. Just make sound. Sound away all the energies held, the deep, dark rooms within you that were told to shut up or there would be consequences. Vary the volume, the duration, the pitch. Let them oscillate like the foothills and then let them become the jagged peaks of the newborn mountains, moving in wide swaths of pitch euphoria. Learn what this thing can do, this voice. Sound off. 1, 2, 3, 4. Communication and expression. We all have something to say. Always have. Too often we do not have those who will listen. We are all too busy, too overwhelmed to really show up for one another for any length of time. It is not a personal slight, but more just the way we've been forced to accommodate the forms that never spoke to us. When did you vote to give up your rights? Things just happen. Thank God that there's always a big picture. Communication is a funny thing. Sometimes it's forced upon us with a tone that bites and pushes against our personal whole-body tympanic membrane, causing intense discomfort that was probably ignored. Sometimes it is soft and sweet and lifts us into arms that tell us everything will be all right, no matter what. And of course, there are all those variations in between, the nuances, the flavor. Communication is expression in motion, sent outward to make some kind of connection with another, to deliver information, to deliver support, to deliver feeling. It is paced and breathes much like the participants. It is theoretically a process of giving and taking, or giving and receiving, a beautiful dance that leads itself, if the participants are in that framework of mind, or it is a battle, a series of statements of personal truth or command peppered with interruptions, artillery barrages across a no-man's land of understanding. Nothing is really shared, for there is just a sound dumping onto the other. It is a tennis match of volleys with little substance, for little is really heard. Instead, energy is built and resentments are birthed. Neither party feels heard, but they are often in the orgasmic aftermath of delivering the personal goods, thinking that they have achieved something. This kind of behavior comes from too many times not being listened to, feeling heard. The desire to be heard pushes so many into perpetual filibusters any time the opportunity arises. A throat chakra contained explodes outward in a messy way when given the chance for a while. We communicate to be heard from a confident foundation of relationship with the voice and a willingness to express and to listen. We can then move towards effectively communicating. Ideally, both parties listen to one another, and rather than rehearsing what he is going to say, responds to what is actually being said. Reflective listening leaves a recipient feeling heard, which will increase the likelihood of you getting the same. It is even a good idea to ask your receivers if they are in a space to hear you. You might have a personal agenda and want the other to do something specific. Checking with them first will avert frustrating experiences. Often the recipient is not in a space to hear you like you want. This would be good to know up front. And then a future time could be set aside, if possible, to re-engage. Communication also requires that we be sensitive to our audience. Selecting words and topics to share can be a useful strategy to open up trusting doors that will lead to deeper sharings. Being honest and speaking our truth is a desire in communicating. Not everyone is able to hear that. The beauty of communication is that you can set up an artificial situation to share your authentic information, even if there is no one hearing it. This will serve to move the energy underneath the sharing, if it is coming from a wounded place. We move on to the mantras and the chant and intentional song, critical elements of this part. We also look at language, and we will look at the silence and the manifestation via spoken word intention. So we will pick up at mantras and chants and look at some of the characteristics of those next week. So by all intents and purposes, we have two sessions left, and we will be complete by Memorial Day. Woohoo! I can see it now. The whole world will celebrate, or at least the Western world, at least the United States will celebrate the completion of this massive course we've been on. Wow. Well, I am so grateful for your willingness to be there and listen and glean what you can and what you choose to from the words that are being given, from the thoughts that are being shared. I hope the mouse is going to be okay out there tonight. I might leave a little blankie out on the steps. I wish you well. I'll stay on the line for a few moments more in case there's anything, questions, comments, anything like that. And then we'll call it quits. I'll send you off your link by the morning's light and wish you just a beautiful week and invite you in whatever way possible to put these new strategies for conscious thriving into practice through your root chakra, through your sacral, through your solar plexus, through your heart, and through your throat, for now. Endless blessings. And so it is. Good night, everyone.